Time to get started. So good morning and really nice to have you here, Daryl, Margie and Megan. So my name is Miffy. I'm the program coordinator here at Lungri Tungpa Centre and this course, Ancient Wisdom for Modern Life. Oh boy, don't we need that? It's a short course, 6 weeks, but really takes the essence of the Buddha's teachings, how it applies to our really busy, distractible, stressful modern lives. So human beings throughout the ages have been, we've always had fears, anxieties, hopes, wishes, yearnings. That's no different from now to ancient times. The Buddha's wisdom, the Buddha's psychology is as equally relevant, then as it is now. But often just putting it into modern terminology, I mean, that's what does it for me, instead of ye oldie worldly kind of speak. So this course takes the Buddha's wisdom, especially to deal with society, with family and work and all the pressures of modern life, and takes that really deep psychological insight that the Buddha had. Like I said, my name's Miffy. I've been here at Lungri Tungpa Centre for about 24 years and lead a lot of these courses. It's really lovely to have you all along. This course also came about because of my own questions and my own difficulties of dealing with life. So, do any of these situations ring a bell that we have the highs and lows of life? We're never stable, really happy one day, but then plummet down again the next. And even when things are right, there's a little bit of niggling about, oh, but then it's going to come to an end. Up and down like a yo-yo all the time. It's so exhausting. Uncertainty, dealing with uncertainty takes a huge amount of, energy. It sucks energy from us. Relationships come and go, jobs come and go. COVID arrives, all of these things that we don't expect. And we crave for certainty. We just want to know. We just want to know when it's going to be over or see the light at the end of the tunnel. And when we don't know how long, for instance, a lockdown is going to go on for, it really saps our inner resources. So loneliness. Even though we've got all this connectivity and social media, so much loneliness in the world. And it's different from being alone. We can be alone and have a very rich inner life or research things or read hundreds of books, but that feeling of isolation, of loneliness, that's something else. That's this kind of inner experience. And we all experience that dissatisfaction, just plain old boredom. Or just thinking there's got to be something else. There's got to be more. Disappointments, cravings, yearnings, problems with our body and our health, with having to master new skills like technology. So all of these things actually are a list from the Buddha of the eight sufferings of being a human being. And I mean, they're so pertinent, aren't they? So this course deals with all of that. What can we do? Because we can't magically make COVID go away. We can't just magically get job security. We have no idea what's going to happen with our relationships, but we can do something about all of the stress that that causes within our heart. So we all want to be happy, but happiness eludes us. What we're going to do in this course is see how come it's not through lack of trying. What are the causes that disturb our inner equilibrium? What is it that saps our energy? And what we can do to build that kind of rich inner life so that wherever we go and whatever we do, we're kind of open-hearted, relaxed, confident. So all of those things are like a result of doing the inner work. Now, I think I might get the screen share up just for a moment. So yes, ancient wisdom for modern life. So that this is also one of my real passions, is trying to become a bridge between the Buddha's teachings and our life now. Because I know I've had to rely on other people explaining things to me and putting things into a context that I can relate to. And then all the doors of the Buddha's teachings open up. So I'll just say a little tiny bit about myself also. How come I'm here? Well, that's because it was my mother who started Lungri Tungpa Center. So I've had a background in Buddhism, but it doesn't necessarily mean I've been a good Buddhist. In fact, I've probably been a very bad Buddhist for a lot of my life. So, you know, I'm coming from that space of trial and error, and that's what I'm going to be able to share with you. So let's just take a moment to set our motivation. You know, we've got obviously reasons in common why we're here at this course. And even if we don't know each other, you know, everybody who comes along to these courses, straight away we know we're all interested in a similar thing. We all want to be good people. We all want to, you know, we have a wish to contribute to the world in some way, to make the world a better place. So let's just set our motivation that everything that we discuss and contemplate and learn about and try and practice in this course, that it really comes to a great fruition, that we have realizations in our mind and we're able to develop that inner resilience, and that it becomes the seeds for developing all the wisdom of the Buddha and being able to be a real positive force in the world. And a Buddhist motivation will go even further and go, may all of everything that we hear about and discuss, may it become the seeds for our own enlightenment, our liberation from the problems of cyclic existence and our own enlightenment, and so we can also bring everyone along with us. So that kind of altruistic wish. So if we set our motivation that way, then the course will have a lot of momentum for you. Now, what we're talking about in this course in particular, over the 6 weeks, is pretty much what we can call the perfect storm. So what we have, and this comes from a book by Lama Yeshe, there are six main factors, or six things that cause disturbing emotions, that, you know, ruffle our equilibrium, our peace of mind. And some of those, you know, they come and they go, but when we have all six at the same time, we're really in trouble. That's when we fall into a heap of depression, when we become you know, ridden with anxiety. It's really when our life kind of breaks down. Luckily, not all of them happen at the same time all the time. So we've got a chance to do something about all of them. From the Buddhist point of view, actually the nature of our mind is calm and clear, like a still clear pool of water. But when it's agitated, you know, when it's all shook up, when there's rubbish in there, then it all becomes, you know, toxic, and we can't see clearly and we're agitated. And so then we think, oh, we've got to put something else in to fix it. But actually what we've got to do is take away the agitation, take away all of these things, and let our mind relax and become clear to reveal its natural clarity. So what we're going to have a look at, these six factors: society, media, what's called the seed or the potential within our own mind for unhappiness and problems, the object, the things out there, attention, how we focus on things, how we see them. Sometimes it's called inappropriate attention, and habits, the momentum, how we're propelled just through the power of habit. So today we're going to have a look at the first two, society and media, because it's much more straightforward, very accessible. We can all relate to it. But most importantly, what we can do about it from an inner point of view. Next week we'll have a look at the seed and the object. So how to really find the root causes of our problems. And if we deal with them, then no matter where we are or what we're doing, we'll be able to be relaxed and confident, and we won't lose our equanimity. Then the last few classes will be on attention. So that is, you know, the disturbing emotions like aversion and anger and hatred, craving, jealousy, all of those ways of attention, how we focus on things that are so disturbing for us, what we can do about it, how we can dismantle them. So again, not forcing ourselves to change, but dismantling these mistaken ways of attention. And looking at habits and how to deconstruct the negative habit patterns, and then how to put in place positive habits. So really how to start practicing being a really good human being and get our energy back, so that we're not just trying to, you know, all the time fighting with ourselves, but actually create some positive momentum for us, positive habits. So our state of mind is influenced by external factors, but lasting happiness must come from within. So a lot of these things, you know, there are many social justice projects. There's, you know, there's politics and education and hospitals and schools. That all deals with the external factors. And our society, we're in a fairly modern society, and, you know, in terms of like dealing with COVID, we're incredibly fortunate. There's a lot of effort put into those external factors. But if we actually want lasting change, we have to work on our mind. We've got to look within. So it's like this missing component, mind education. So much is spent on schools and hospitals, but, you know, what about educating the human mind, our heart, our emotions, how we deal with problems and change and uncertainty? So that's really what this course is going to be about. So actually, just before we go on, since it's a nice small group, it'd be really nice I can ask you what drew you to this course? You know, one reason why the name of the course or something stood out, or is there some kind of, issue or example in your life that you thought, okay, this is the course to come to. So I've just put it onto a gallery view. If you turn your cameras on and if you can unmute, then do. I've given you the power to do so. So Daryl, tell me what drew you to this course today?
First and foremost, the name, Ancient Wisdom for Modern Times, it just sounded, I'm not sure. It just really sort of grabbed me. I saw the headline and I was like, I'm going to do that class. And because obviously Miffy is the teacher, your teachings are just so accessible to me personally. So,
I think that's why.
You bridge really well.
Well, look, I'd give it everything I've got, Daryl, so thank you. And what about Margie or Megan? Are you going to be brave and tell me how come you come along today? Margie, go for it.
Well, I can't turn my camera on because currently I'm in a towel. But
right.
So, bit of a late start. Again, the name. I mean, the principles have always resonated with me, but trying to get it in the craziness, I don't like the word craziness, but literally the busyness and how many draws there are on my time and attention, trying to really focus on being able to handle all the external stresses.
Yes. Well, today in particular will, you know, help with that. So fantastic. Right. I'm glad you made it just in time basis.
I'm getting dressed as we speak. Thank you.
Okay, good. And Megan, were you able to turn your microphone on at all, or not yet? Well, if you like. Oh, there you go. So, Megan, hello. No, it's not working. The technology has failed us today, Megan. You'll have to put whatever you want to say into the chat. It says the microphone's on, but nothing's happening. But I'm very happy you're here. Okie dokie. So let's jump straight in then. Thank you, everyone. These six factors. Let's have a look at the easy ones, but, you know, like Margie said, they're so full on. So the first one, society. And I just have a little thing to read to you. This is from Geshe Sopa, Steps on the Path to Enlightenment. It's the second volume. And so he goes through this teaching because it is this six factors that cause disturbing emotions is a really nice bite-sized Buddhist teaching. It's in all of the Path to Enlightenment texts. And so this is just a little bit from Geshe Sopa about social distraction. So this refers to those worldly activities that bring you under the influence of unwholesome acquaintances. So when you spend time with people whose minds are completely distracted by drinking or playing games or wasting time, this naturally contributes to the development of afflictions such as attachment, hatred, jealousy, pride, and so forth. This kind of social distraction can be very powerful. One day or even for a few hours of exposure to a stimulating distraction can agitate your mind for days or weeks afterward. It stirs up and excites the afflictions and makes it quite difficult to regain control of your mind. So I really know this from my own experience from, you know, many years of being drunk and drinking way too much vodka, and pretty much my only social circle was who I knew at the pub. And that gave me a very distorted view of humanity, and I didn't even realize. And it was only when I stopped drinking, first off, I lost most of my friends, but then I started knowing people who weren't drunks, and it was a revelation to me. So this kind of the society or peer group really has a huge effect on us, and if we're trying to lead a good life and kind of deal with all of our inner turmoil, then associating with everybody else who's also in turmoil is really difficult if you haven't developed your own inner resources first. So this isn't about kind of being judgmental and saying, you know, these people are bad or whatever, but it's the effect that unwholesome acquaintances has on us that we've got to be really realistic about. So our peer group, if you can remember back being a teenager, the acknowledgement or not of our peer group was a matter of life and death, wasn't it? It has such a big effect on us. It can shake us to our core if we have difficulties with our peer group. Also in our profession, you know, if we're not acknowledged in our profession, our peer group, it can completely rock our confidence, even though we might intellectually know we're quite good at something. So to recognize the effect that our peer group has on us. Also, the society or class we're born into. Now, we might think we're in a classless society, but, you know, whether what our race or nationality is has a huge effect on how others treat us, and that affects us. You know, and as Australia says, it's not racist, everyone has a fair go, but, you know, we all know there's a lot of racism in Australia. If you're born into a small town as well, the kind of society in the small town has a really big effect on us. And if we're born into a poor family, how we grow up and feel about ourselves is quite different from if we're born into a well-off family. And what happens, of course, is we don't realize that our confidence, for instance, might just come from the fact that we have enough to eat and a secure roof over our head. Or we don't realize that our stress and anxiety comes from just that uncertainty about where's the next meal or the next dollar coming from. We think it's us, but it's actually the society that we're in. And many people who grow up in a poorer family often then experience that they themselves are not enough. Or you grow up in a richer family and without even knowing that, you know, rock around with a sense of entitlement. So both of these things come from the effect of society. And if we're not aware of it, then they catch us up. We kind of take them personally. Society also, though, is the group that we identify with or choose to belong to. So, you know, if you're gay, if you're LGBT and you finally come out, now you've got your own group, your own society. And when it's a choice like that to actually be able to have that courage and come out and then have the support of the group, it's so amazing. So the question that we have to ask ourselves is, how well do we withstand influences from bad company? So company that has a bad effect on us, I should probably say, because, you know, what happens is that we imitate the people that we spend time with. So my for years, you know, my best friend Pearlie, who's very extroverted, she's got black hair, freckles, gappy teeth, quite different from me, but everybody thought we were sisters. And why? Because we lived in the same house and we had the same body language and the same speech mannerisms, just from living together. And so everyone thought, you know, like, not even sisters, but then they asked us, were we twins? And if you've ever lived in a share house with someone with an accent, like a beautiful Welsh or Irish accent, you know, you find yourself taking on the accent and they think you're taking the piss, but it's just that, you know, we just naturally imitate people we spend time with. So, you know, that makes me think, who am I spending my time with? What am I imitating? What else? Okay, so social distraction eats away at our limited time. So that one's pretty obvious. But what I found with that was all those years that I spent in the pub just shooting the breeze, telling jokes, hanging out with people, having a great time. So what was kind of fun and entertaining at the time, it didn't have any purpose. Can I remember any of that? No. 15 years of my life gone. So there is a real difference between having fun or just enjoying yourself. It's like a consumerist activity, or actually investing in yourself as a human being, doing something meaningful. And many of the people that I spent time with was just because they were fun to be with, but it wasn't necessarily that they were good people. Actually, a lot of them were kind of a bit socially degenerate. They were shoplifters or you know, just didn't contribute in any way. But they were great fun. So, you know, I it took me years to notice that. This other one, we take our conditions personally, especially with what kind of class or socioeconomic status we were born into, we take that personally. It really has a big effect on us. And all of this, of course, leads to what's called status anxiety. So this is where we kind of feel pressured to compare ourselves to others because everybody else does it. We kind of just want what everybody else has. And the trap in that, of course, is that what we see other people have, the perfect life, as presented on social media, it's not actually how it is, but it gnaws away at us. So what to do about this? I mean, this is a familiar picture for us, isn't it? So what do we do? And actually the crucial thing to be able to distinguish between whom we can affect positively and who overwhelms us. So this is one of those things that happens. You know, we want to be able to help people. We want to be able to help our friends. It's like we put in some effort and it's like going up a hill, isn't it? And then depending on who it is, we reach our limit. We run out of energy and then we kind of reach the crest of it. And instead of us being a good influence on them, they become a bad influence on us and we go downhill. So for people that we love and care about, because that's foremost in our mind, then we do practice patience. Someone dear to us is going through a really bad time, is maybe being rude or cross with us, we practice patience. We don't retaliate. But there comes a time when they do it one too many times and then we go, that's it. People say often it's relatives that are a bit needy and might just annoy us incredibly, and they ring us up and we just like roll our eyes, oh my God. And you know, you might be able to spend 5 minutes on the phone with them, but 10 minutes, 15 minutes is just get me out of here. So what I've noticed is that this happens, this being able to affect them and then suddenly they've affected me, they've brought me down. I don't notice it when it's happening. I might notice a day later or a week later and go, oh, that's what happened. So the thing to do about this, though, is that what we normally do is when we get annoyed like that or when someone just acts badly towards us one too many times, then we shut them off. We close our heart to them. We might still have to work with them every day. They might be in our family. We might still see them every day, but inside we close down. And this is a terrible way to be because it harms them, it harms us, it saps our energy. It makes us, you know, less of a person. Actually, what we can try and do is the exact opposite, which is when we become overwhelmed by others negatively, try and keep them physically distant, but still then be able to keep our heart open to them. It's a complete switch around. And in particular, this is so important. Friends that I have who have a brother or a sister who's a drug addict, and, you know, it's a terrible experience to go through. And really what you are, you're in a holding pattern. There's very little you can do whilst, you know, your relative is going through this kind of terrible experience of being an addict. And so often what happens is so stressful for the rest of the family that in the end they just go, we can't do anything, and they shut them out. But what happens, you know, when you close your heart down, that's also no solution. So this to be able to really distinguish between physically going, I can't see you anymore, you know, you steal all my stuff or whatever, or we can't relate at the moment, but I still love you. So that you're being very realistic, what you as a human being can do day to day. And if you can't cope with it, then physically keep a distance. And then that way you can still keep your heart open and you're still ready that one day, and it does happen, someone who's addicted hits rock bottom, finds some help, and they determine to change. And then you're there. You're ready. You're ready to help them because your heart is still open. But that takes a lot of patience. That's a waiting game. You might have them on hold for 10 years, but still your heart is open. So keeping destructive friends close in your heart but physically distant. That's the ultimate kind of way to aim at it, for us then to be ready when circumstances allow. Resist social inertia or bystander syndrome. So that's that pack mentality, isn't it? That something happens. You know, like if you're on the bus on public transport and usually everyone's got their head in their phone, and then if there's a racist incident, if someone starts picking on somebody on the bus. So mostly people look away, don't they? And they wait. Should I do something? As this incredible social inertia, and we wait to see if somebody else is going to do something. And all it takes is for one person to go, hey, mate, that's not cool. And then other people will step up and support them. But to take that first step, to be that person, to go against that social inertia, it takes incredible courage and incredible energy. And to my shame, I succumb to that one. I'm too scared. And I really regret being too scared about it. I've gone through a lot of trauma of then coming back home and going, I can't believe I didn't say anything. You know, how could I not have helped that person? I've just been frozen to the spot. And it's this power of society. Here I am thinking I'm a good Buddhist, you know, but actually in practice, it's difficult. So the thing is to recognize social inertia when it happens to you, just to recognize, oh, that's what's happening. I'm terrified because of the power of society. And call it for what it is. Don't get judgmental about it or beat yourself up about it. Just to recognize that's so terrible. And if it's happening to you, it's happening to everybody else on the bus as well. So I'm going to take all their fear onto me and do it for them. So that's what's got me through, to go, everybody else is even more terrified than me. I've got to do it. I'll hold all of that terror for them. That's okay. And the last thing, we've got to choose good friends. So you think about everybody that you know and all of the people that you know or the people you spend time with. You may not know them well, but you spend day in, day out with them. Are they better people than you? Are they wiser? They have stronger ethics, more courage? We've got to find friends that are better than us and then make sure we spend time with them. Actually cultivate them as friends. So like when we look at it like that, you may be the best person in your social group. You might be the one that really tries to be ethical and tries to be patient and supports everybody. But if you know, then you're the one who's carrying everyone along. Now you need to have someone that carries you along. So in Buddhism, that's the Sangha, the spiritual community. And if you don't have a group of people or somebody to support you like that, then recognize that's why you're so tired. So to give ourselves a break, you know, we've got to choose some good friends that just by being in their slipstream, we become a better person. And give yourself a break and actually get that kind of support and help. So even, you know, coming to a Dharma center, Light Langri Tantra center, it's like that. You come in, whether you're online or whether you come in person, to be amongst other people that you know are good people, that are really trying to do their very best. It's such a relief. And you don't kind of notice that you missed it until you have an experience of that. So part of the homework will be just to see, to gauge within the next week, what's the ratio of where you're the good influence on others, or when you can get into the slipstream of someone really amazing. And if you find that you don't have any ratio, you don't have that support, then just acknowledge your efforts and this is why you're tired. So just before we go on now, are there any questions? Questions, comments? Megan said, ancient people seem to know a lot. Yeah, Daryl, go for it.
I guess I was always worried about sort of keeping people distant but close in heart. I was sort of worried that borderlined on aversion. I thought, should I keep fronting the storm and, you know, just sort of pushing through, or am I, you know, averting by saying, I can't do this anymore, I'm sorry?
Yeah, I think the way that you can tell is try and make a conscious effort to think of their good qualities first, because often what happens is we start focusing on the problems and the drawbacks of a person, and that really taints our relationship with them. So even like, you know, when, so you say my junkie brother or my junkie sister, instead go my sister who suffers from addiction. So you've got, you know, my lovely sister who suffers from addiction, instead of my junkie sister. So that way, if we start by recognizing the positive qualities, the whole person, and yes, they're completely overwhelmed by their addiction, start there, and then just be really clear. Each day, what's your energy level? How much can you withstand? And just be aware of it. And if you've got no choice, if you have to be with these people, then you have to really set your motivation in the morning so that you are kind to yourself and you're ready. And when you start getting frustrated, you go, oh, yeah, that's right, I'm getting frustrated. It's okay, relax. So you're prepared, you know, and kind of being careful and just slow down a little bit. But the other thing, and it's been on ads on TV, isn't it, of like, are you okay day, just to, instead of sitting there with social media scrolling through, just send someone a text. So if you might be able to talk to them, but just send them a text to say, oh, just, you know, think of you and, you know, hope you're okay and we'll catch up like in a month. Something like that. Margie, did you have a question?
I'm taking notes furiously. but it's so true for me. I think just what you said then, just setting the intention in the morning, because I just completely get swept up in, like you say, those groups of people that end up with a pack mentality, and you walk away feeling completely depleted from the interaction, and it creeps up on you, and then all of a sudden you just want to run away from everybody. So it's, I guess what you're saying is to slow down and just remember when that's getting all caught up, you have to remember that that's just what it is. You're just getting caught up. It's not you.
Yeah, there is this kind of time delay, isn't there? And it's always like, you know, retrospectively I can see, oh, that's what happened. But I think why that happens is because when we have difficulties with people, we conflate the person with their behaviour. And so if someone's behaving badly, we just think they're a bad person or a horrible person. We don't think a wonderful person behaving badly. So that's a really deep inner habit, to conflate those two things. Starting off to probably in the morning, to be real proactive about that, of you know, the four immeasurables practice of, you know, everybody wants happiness. May they all have happiness. Everyone wants to be free of suffering. May they all be free of suffering. Wouldn't it be amazing if we all had equanimity instead of these ups and downs, you know, and the inner resilience, the sense of joy or happiness that comes from within that's not dependent on circumstances. So if we've really got to set the perspective first, and then this the rest of the thing won't happen. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Right. Daryl, yep.
I think Glenn said a while ago about cognitive fusion. That really stuck with me, sort of not binding the behaviour to the person.
Oh, I know. It's cognitive fusion is just, it's a tyranny. And it catches me every time. And really, it's one of the most profound Buddhist insights. So we use the modern term cognitive fusion, fusing the person and their behaviour. But, you know, that's really the essence of the Buddhist psychology is about that very thing. So we'll kind of deal with that as we go through the course, and in particular the classes on habits and the three higher trainings of just how to break that momentum of it, because it's there right deep down to our very instincts. Okay, let's just do a little tiny reflection on society, peer group pressure. So just take a nice deep breath and just become present in the room, just like the body's nice and just kind of there quietly in the room, so our mind too can just become still. And we've been talking for a while now. Just take a moment to think, well, how much of my life is influenced by peer pressure? What's the ratio? What's the main areas of my life really influenced by peer pressure, societal pressure? And, for instance, how easily do we just adopt the values of our friends and family, the actions, the mannerisms in public, how we treat others? How often do we just adopt those from those around us? And how easy is it for us to go against that, say to go, that's not right, I'm not comfortable with that? How easy or difficult is it for us to do that when we're pressured by others to withstand it? How much ease or difficulty do we have calling out bullying, domestic violence, racism when it happens in front of us? Or do we just feel uncomfortable and not know what to do? So just to recognize the how much power that has on us. So it wasn't that long ago that domestic violence, rape in marriage, casual racism was acceptable. It's not that even those people that practiced those things were bad, but it was just the momentum of the group, of the society. So the other side of the reflection is, what qualities do we look for in people? How do we choose our friends? Do we even choose? Of all of our friends, which ones do we consciously cultivate try and spend time with. And the people that we spend time with, do we spend that time because they're fun or because they challenge us? They make us better people. They call us out on our own bad behavior. And the people we spend time with the most, do they encourage our inner journey, or do they tease us or belittle it or are intimidated by it? How much support do we have for this inner work? And then the last question is, how quickly do we notice when we're becoming overwhelmed by negative influences? What's the time delay? And then to end this reflection, we can make a determination in our mind that when we are with people who are really negative or bring us down, instead of reacting with the negativity back, to make a determination to react with tolerance, with awareness, with patience, to be the good influence on others. And then you can take a nice deep breath in through the nose, out through the mouth. Open your eyes. So we're going to have some more similar questions like that in the reflection sheets for the homework for the coming week, but it's just nice to do a little kind of reflection like that too to consolidate. So now let's go on to the next bit, which is the media. So these two really go together. And, of course, now what we have nowadays that we didn't have in the Buddha's time is social media and the two of them together are more powerful, you know, than the sum of the parts. But the media, what it refers to is any kind of teachings, explanations or advice that create confusion or that contribute to more hatred, aversion, craving, desire, confusion. So the media, I mean, that was in the Buddha's time as well as us now. The actual tool of the technology was probably different, you know, stuff written on leaves and things like that, parchment and whatever, not the little magic computers in our hands, but nevertheless, the function identically the same. So this is what Lama Yeshe from Wisdom Energy, Basic Buddhist Teachings, fantastic book. So there's a article in here that is on these six factors. So here's just a little bit from Lama Yeshe. So much comes in, but generally there is no integration or differentiation between what's useful and what's harmful. In fact, nearly every aspect of popular Western culture, books, magazines, movies, TV and the like, is totally dedicated to producing more and more desire and superstition. There are exceptions to this, of course. Some movies, for instance, are different, but most of them show you what you like and what the superstitious mind wants to see, anything to arouse your interest. The people who create these films and books and so forth have a practical understanding of psychology. They know exactly what arouses people's desires and superstitions and what will make them more confused than they already are. In short, misconceptions and misinformation cause more delusion if the mind lacks discriminating wisdom knowledge. You receive so much information from TV, for example, that you actually become excited, or sometimes you can't take it any longer and have to leave the room or chuck the remote at the TV. So whatever information there is that makes you become more confused should be avoided as much as possible. So, you know, that was written before the internet, and boy, it's even, you know, just as relevant now. So propaganda, fake news, conspiracy theories, all of those things, we have that that echo chamber now in social media where we what comes up on our feed is just the things that we agree with. And this is really tricky. Not only that, but we can intellectually fight against it and know those things are not true, or we can read all of the horrible comments that are written, but it still has an effect. It still contaminates our mind. So I can tell when Eddie's been on Facebook, I can tell, because he starts huffing and harring and going, oh, my God, and la, 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 and I can tell his mind's being filled with rubbish just from the responses that he's muttering under his breath. Totally different from if Eddie's reading a Dharma book. And then I'll just hear mutter, mutter, oh, wow. Yeah, I always thought that. So there's one thing about being educated. You know, we can be very well educated, but nevertheless, we still are affected because it goes deeper than just this intellectual knowledge. You know, we can be educated about feminism, but we can still see ads and just think, oh, I'm just fat, old, and ugly. We can still feel like that, even though intellectually we know what's happening. So let's have a look. Anything that creates confusion, unhappiness, desire, hatred, that's the danger of media. So actually, it's not the messenger. We can't shoot the messenger. It's our own uncritical attitude. And this one's really interesting too, because throughout the ages, everyone said, oh, you know, it's going to be the death of us. When books first came out, people were killed for that. And then social media came out and everyone's, you know, this is going to be terrible. But actually there has been a lot of good come from it, from the media. There's been soft revolutions that come from it. There's been Black Lives Matter, you know, of just actual some accountability just from recording things. So the danger isn't in the media. The danger is in our uncritical attitude of being swept up, sucked in. So anything that encourages us to commit harmful actions or stimulates our desire or hatred, and for instance, like the shock jock radio, Alan Jones and whoever, I just can't withstand that. There's nothing like something like that to bring out the very worst in me and to actually respond even worse than that. So we've got to know our measure and go, okay, I don't have any tolerance for that. I have no immunity for that. I'm going to give myself a break from it because at the moment I'm not strong enough to withstand it. So to know our own limits and then to start educating ourselves, so having a really critical attitude. So part of the homework is watching the Gruen transfer because advertising have the best understanding of psychology apart from the Buddha. and it really demystifies everything, is incredibly juicy stuff. The Buddha said the objects of knowledge are infinite. You know, sitting under a tree and someone said, you know, when did time begin or whatever, and all of those wonderfully intellectually juicy questions. And the Buddha actually said, you know, see all the leaves up here on the tree. How many leaves? You know, countless. So the objects of knowledge are infinite. What's interesting is infinite. And then he just picked up a couple of leaves from the ground and said, but this is what I teach, just these few things, the way out of suffering. So I know all of my varied interests and things. I could just keep on reading things forever. But what's the point? A lot of it's just entertainment for my mind, intellectual entertainment. But what's the purpose? Will it help me solve my problems? Will it clean out my mind? Is the purpose to help me and help others? Or is it just an excellent question, like when did time begin? Now, that's a useless question. But when we look at the, you know, modern science and how much effort's gone into answering that question, or getting to the moon, you know, how many billions of dollars, what's the point? So when we start getting really curious and intensely interested in things, the thing is to recognize why. What's our purpose for this? It might just be to chill out, that's fine, but to bring some awareness to it. Otherwise, we're going to spend our life in distraction, and then we'll lose our health, we'll be on our deathbed, and we'll go, oh my God, what did I do? I wish I had done something different. And one of the biggest case in point is that so many times, you know, I've been here at Lungry Tampa Centre for 24 years, and so many times I will get a phone call from someone saying, quick, quick, my husband is dying, or my cat is dying, or my dog is dying. What do I do? And it's too late then to go into what do you do, because then it's emergency stations. It's now, while we have the time, that we actually deal with these big questions, life and death questions, and am I prepared to die? And what happens when someone close to me dies? What am I going to do? We got to look at those things now, because in the heat of the moment, oh my God, there's very little you can do. And yet, whenever we have courses on death and dying or rebirth or whatever, like everyone's like, oh yeah, I must do that one day, but not now. So our purposes, they're not actually aligned with what matters to us and what affects us. We'll just put those uncomfortable topics aside until it's too late. So, and you know, that's incredibly distressing for us then too. So we really got to make sure that we make some time for the things that are really important. They may not be urgent, but they're really important. And of course, social media is changing how our brain functions now. You know, we outsource our memory to Google. We don't have to remember all of those things anymore. We've actually outsourced our research and our archives to Google. Our memory, we outsource to books. Before books, everyone memorized things. So now we don't have to memorize things. It's in a book. Now we have time to analyze. So again, it's not the media that's the problem. It's what we're going to do with it. So some simple things, what to do. Well, most important, to look for valid, authentic teachings. So to not just gravitate to everything that you like the sound of or agree with, but actually try and be exposed to something challenging or something that you may not agree with, and look deeper. And authentic teachings. Always find, what are the sources for this? Who says? What's the lineage here? Whether it comes from the news, whether it's Buddhist texts, whether it's information about vaccines, you know, all of those things, we really got to go, who's the source? And particularly in Buddhist study and Buddhist teachings, it's like number one. You can't just say blah, blah, blah. You've got to go, and here's the source for what I've said. Here's the book where the Buddha said it. Here's the sutra where the Buddha said it. Here's the commentary. So you can go and check up for yourself. Just because someone says it, you know, with charisma, or someone says it, oh, trust me because, you know, because I say so, it's not good enough. It's really important to look for authentic teachings. And even with the news, it might be authentic reporting, but we've got to ask, well, what's their agenda? Where is this leading us to a more understanding, tolerant, supportive society, or more bigoted. So there are hidden agendas, and our job is to discover them. And then to bring some awareness of why we are immersing ourselves in this information. So I love bad TV. I watch a lot of bad TV. I come home at night from classes at Lungri Tonka Center, might finish stuff at about 11 o'clock. And then I want to wind down. So I stick on the telly, and it just kind of paces me while I do the rest of my work. And so some of the TV stuff is great, and others, you know, it's just rubbish. But the thing is, if I'm just aware, oh, I've got it on to pace myself, to make sure I don't fall asleep over my computer, or just to see what's going on in the world, my reactions are quite different just from bringing an awareness to it. So it is fine to chill out, but you just got to go, oh, I'm just watching this to chill out. Again, with the news. So I'm a bit of a news addict. But to bring some awareness to it, why am I watching this? Just because of the bottomless bowl kind of thing, what's happening next? Or to actually broaden my wisdom, what's happening in the world? What's happening to other people around me? And then I notice, oh, yeah, when you hear about news in Australia, you have a different response to if you hear about news over there. And so then you can bring in your teachings and your readings on equanimity. Ah, how come I'm partial to me and mine, Australians, but, you know, what's happening in India doesn't matter. So then when you're watching the news, you can develop your wisdom. You can recognize, look what's happening in my mind. And when you see terrible things on the telly, you can develop your compassion. Instead of going, oh, no, you can take it a step further and go, may they be free of suffering. May they receive all the help that they need. May I be able to contribute to their welfare. May I do something in the world to help. And it becomes your inspiration and your energy instead of just saying, oh, no. So that's about bringing Dharma wisdom to what you see. And I tell you what, the experience of the news is completely different if you do this. And it doesn't take that much. You do it in the ads. Just notice what's happening with your mind without being judgmental, just kind of bringing awareness to it. And then you can develop your Dharma wisdom. Use the power of advertising to develop your virtue, your empathy, compassion, tolerance, gratitude. So part of the power of advertising, you know, it just means exposure. And that's why we have an altar. That's why we have mantras, you know, written and stuck up everywhere, because we've got ads for buy this. So at least we have a mantra, Om Mani Padme Hum, remember about compassion. So in your own house, in your own room, you might, you know, stick up affirmations or all sorts of things, but it's really worth doing that because it affects us. And there's so many ads. There's ads everywhere. There's ads as you're going down the escalator on the back of the toilet door. You know, all of this rubbish is coming into our mind. At least in our own home, we have something that's really positive advertising for virtue. And I've just put in here, don't blame the tool, but blame the lack of discrimination. So, you know, we can be the boss of our own technology. It doesn't have to boss us. So when the phone rings, you know, when your phone rings, it's good to just pause. Don't immediately go and answer it. And notice that tension between it ringing and you wanting to pick it up and not. And just let that tension just go for a moment or two longer so that you don't have this compulsion to respond all the time. And with the emails, one of the really excellent things is to just check them at 4 p.m. Now, this may or may not work for everybody, but check the emails at the end of the day, not the beginning, because that way you'll be able to very instinctually prioritize. Whereas at the beginning of the day, what happens, we just get sucked in and 4 hours later we're still there, just fiddling around with this and that, emails, and a lot of that just resolves itself. So what we're doing is creating less noise. Questions, comments? Everything okay? Nothing to add?
I love the idea, Miffy, of using the advertising even in your own home to have those positive affirmations. I mean, I have a calendar hanging on the back of the toilet door in our house, but maybe if I just put a little, you know, a mantra, as you said.
Yeah, just the quote, just like a different Buddhist quote every now and again. Just change it up every now and again and just stick it there. It has a huge effect, and it's easy, and I really like an easy thing. I actually, years ago, the share house that I lived in, we all decided to learn Spanish. So what we did, we just stuck all the Spanish sentences up on paper around the kitchen. So every morning we'd be sitting there all bleary-eyed having our coffee or whatever, and our blurry eyes would alight on the Spanish sentences, and within about 3 months we could all speak Spanish for breakfast. And so it wasn't like, oh, study, study, study. It was just through the input. And when you're kind of all dreary and drowsy in the morning, you kind of relax. So it just goes in. So this is incredible power. Why are we not using it?
I like that.
Margie.
I heard one thing someone said a while ago, that an email is just someone else's to-do list.
Yes.
Isn't it? So they just send the email out, and that's their to-do list, but that doesn't make it our to-do list.
Yeah.
My problem is a lot of the stuff is kid-related and everything seems so urgent.
Yeah.
And that then, like you said, adds to the heightened nature of everything. Yeah. So just and pausing, I guess.
Yeah, that's right. It's in the pausing. So we scroll, yeah. scroll. So maybe if you just look at all of the emails and then step back, go have a cup of tea, make a cup of tea, and then you'll know, oh, this is the one that I have to, this is the important one, and the rest can just wait. But, yes, so somehow we've got to build in a pause. And that will help us with everything. Like with the emails, it's a little bit of biofeedback there. We can see what's going on. But if we can build in a pause with that, it will transfer over to everything else in our life, so that when all the people are talking to us, la, 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 we'll have that habit to build in a pause and go, oh, that's the person that needs the response.
Mm. That's great. There is just, it's just everything coming at you. Building a pause. Maybe that'll be my toilet mantra.
Yeah. That's right. Good.
Thank you.
So, you know, for the reflection, I suppose, we've got, let's see, when we're looking at the media, one thing is we can think, how much are we bombarded by media throughout the day? And pretty much it's the whole time. Wherever we look, there's ads. Wherever we go, there's ads coming through the speakers. Like Brisbane City is very noisy. Other cities don't have that advertising coming through the speakers in the mall, but Brisbane does. And then they've got all the shops, you know, that are blah, blah, blah. It's incredibly noisy. When I went to Melbourne a couple of years ago and sitting in St Kilda, I'm like, is it a public holiday? But no, it's just a quiet, peaceful place compared to Brisbane Mall. So look at how much time we're exposed by the media and recognise it, as all of that is going to drain us. So we have to be proactive and make some time to just sit without anything happening. So it doesn't necessarily mean meditating, but this is one of the great benefits of meditating. It can just be sitting in the garden or sitting in your comfy lounge chair, preferably not lying down because we're so sleep deprived we'll just fall asleep, but just sitting somewhere, gazing at something nice. You might have a beautiful landscape painting on the wall, or a nice family photo, or a lovely garden, or just a view, or a fish tank. But you got to be able to sit there and do nothing. And then if something comes up on to-do list, so that you don't obsess about it, quickly jot it down and then put it aside and then sit there and do nothing and let yourself do nothing. And it's an extraordinary thing. But we've got to create some space. It's not, no one's going to give us that space. And what will happen as you're sitting there doing nothing, you'll start getting agitated. So again, don't worry about that. Just go, oh, here comes agitation. No worries. Just let it kind of wash over you like a wave. You might start becoming aware of all the noise in your head and the conversations going around or whatever. Just become aware of that inner racket. That's okay. And then you might get a little bit deeper and start recognizing how uncomfortable we are with ourselves. And that's also okay. Don't freak out about it. Just become aware where we are not harmonious within our own mind. And the first step is just to recognize that. And normally we don't, because of all the noise that comes in from outside of us. And so then when we are thrown into lockdown and are confronted, as the Buddhas say, with the bare face of our innate mind, it is a confrontation. It's almost unbearable to spend time with oneself. Whereas actually, that's what great practitioners yearn for, is lockdown. So I know many Buddhists were like, yay, lockdown was the best thing that ever happened to me. But for most of the world, it was very, very confronting. It's because we are not used to being peaceful with ourselves. The other thing to notice, just also as a footnote with that, with the telly, is notice how much the effect the media has on you. And social media, Instagram and all those things, all the beautiful people, just notice how it affects how you feel about yourself, and how often how we feel about ourselves is mostly to do with how we look. So being proactive with this is to have some quiet time, that we just force ourselves to be quiet, even if the whole time we're not happy, doesn't matter. We're practicing. And to be with people that are really good people and bring out the best in us, so we start focusing on our inner qualities and not how we look or how our career is going or our status. And it will, just these simple things will have a huge effect on us. Okay, so moving along, just very quickly then. What a Buddhist is, what Buddhism is all about, isn't about religion or even belief, but it's about becoming an inner being, someone who looks within and who's aware of what's going on within the mind instead of just always being reactive. So just before I get onto that, I've got a little thing to read from Lama Yeshe from Wisdom Energy. So Lama Yeshe says, of course, the type of philosophy and logical thinking that underlies true religious belief is not exactly the same as that taught in schools. Mathematical logic, for instance, enables you to deal with a certain strictly defined external problem in a reasonable manner. The original problem is restricted in scope, and the solution that is found completely satisfies it. But Dharma logic, the wisdom of the Buddha, has a much higher and all-encompassing goal. It deals with the inner problems and looks for solutions to the most important question in life: how to find happiness and avoid suffering for oneself and others. When you arrive at solutions using Dharma logic, you find that you've not merely answered one isolated problem, but have discovered the interrelatedness of many inner processes previously thought to be unconnected. This type of reasoning is very demanding, for you must continually check up and investigate the many hows and whys that you uncover. But it's also ultimately most satisfying because it affects the very quality of your life. Such questioning then is a process of causation in that it leads to a solution. It's the same process enacted by a scientist who tries experiment after experiment in order to come up with the best answer. While making inner experiments, you should ask yourself a series of questions in the same way. And by doing this properly, you'll develop and mature spiritually, and as a result, will overcome the uneasiness and dissatisfaction gnawing at you. You'll be able to analyze growing hatred or frustration, for example, and discover not only its causes, but an effective way to lessen and eventually eliminate it. So this is from Lama Yeshe about becoming an inner being, or actually, you know, what Buddhism is all about. So you don't ever have to become religious. When we talk about Buddhism or a spiritual path, what we're talking about is refuge, what we take refuge in. And what we take refuge in at present, we just think about, you know, when the COVID lockdown happened, what did people take refuge in? TikTok videos, baking bread, binge watching series on TV, refuge in our friends. How important are our friends? Refuge in eating. So all of our common refuges. So a Buddhist refuge, though, is the inner refuge that we come to through the help of the teachings of the Buddha, the wisdom of the Buddha, our spiritual community. And what we want to do is develop a natural confidence based on reasoning and research rather than a blind faith. So that means also whatever social media that we take refuge in, rather than just believing it blind faith, actually, you know, checking its sources. So the essence of Buddhism: avoid harm, practice virtue, subdue your mind. This is the essence of the Buddha's teachings. So when we put it that way, it's really simple. And you can think when you wake up in the morning, today I'm going to avoid harm, I'm going to practice virtue, help whenever I can, and I'm going to subdue my mind. Whatever, at least I'm not going to harm and I'm going to look within. So if we want to be happy, you know, we don't have to give ourselves a pep talk. If we have this attitude, we'll naturally become happier and more confident. And what I found is our default refuge is society and media and social media. That's our default refuge. I don't know if it's an Australian thing because we're not a very religious society. Shopping is probably a default refuge as well because there's a lot of human connection that happens. It's what people do together. So when we are looking at what we take refuge in, rather than just having it the default of our peer group and media, consuming the media, we got to check, is the refuge a valid refuge in that can it lead us out of suffering and into happiness? So the Buddha actually listed four qualities of what makes a valid refuge. What is something that is worth putting our faith and confidence in? So I put this picture here of a lady with an umbrella because when we have a refuge, it's like we have protection. It's mind protection, like an umbrella. So most of the time we just try and stop the rain and stop the hail. We just try and stop everything and everyone out there. And it is as futile as trying to stop the hail or the rain. But what we can do is protect our mind. with an umbrella, the auspicious parasol, the precious brolly. And so what this is, if we have an umbrella, then we can go out into any weather. Sun, we're protected from sunstroke. Rain, we're protected from the wet. We don't have to stop all of that stuff. We just protect ourselves, and now suddenly we can go anywhere. So having a refuge gives us that strength, that resilience. So how do we know what's a valid refuge? How do we know whether society or media is going to help us or harm us? So first thing, they themselves have to be free from all fears. Whoever we put our confidence in, they themselves have to have freed themselves first. So this is why our friends, even though they love us, may not be a valid refuge, because they themselves have the same problems as we do. They are not free, just like we are not free. So our refuge, whatever our refuge is, must have freed themselves. So an enlightened being. If we want to cook, we have to actually have someone teach us who knows how to cook. Not me. So that's number one. Number two, then they must have the means to free others. So a method that we ourselves can apply. Because there are many people out there that are good-hearted, that really have a lot of virtue and a lot of wisdom or understanding. But do they have the method to be able to help us? Can they share that with us, and do they have practical strategies for us? What we have in our society is a lot of methods to free us from fear, a lot of self-help books, a lot of really practical psychological techniques, but they're administered by people that are just as screwed up as we are. So I'm a bit biased about that. You know, I have a pretty dim view of some psychologists and some psychology, because, you know, it's just all made up. Very, very little of it is actually evidence-based. But a lot of the techniques are just fantastic. The techniques are dynamite. So they have quality number two, a method to free others, but not quality number one, having actually applied it themselves and had those realizations. So a valid refuge has to have both. Who we go to for protection, that matters. If we go to a psychologist and they give us all of these techniques, and they've got a shocking family life, and their whole life is in disarray, we can't fully put our trust in them. Then the next two, they themselves must have great compassion for all, whether they're close or not. Whether they're family or whether they're strangers, they have equal compassion. So this is like inner professionalism. And we expect this of our doctors, nurses, teachers, kindergarten peoples. You know, we expect them to look after everybody, whether they know them or not, whether they like them or not, to have care, equal care for all of them. And that they aim to help everybody, whether they're Buddhist or not Buddhist, whether they're good people or bad people, or meaning, you know, whether they're acting nicely or acting just destructively, they still aim to help. They aim to help whether they have money or not, whether they can afford to come or not, whether they get praise or not, whether they're blamed, whether they're highly criticized, doesn't matter. Is still the aim to help. So it's impartial, it's unbiased. So just, you know, if we're going about in our life and we see a nice course somewhere or other, this is a fantastic checklist. Are the people themselves practicing what they preach, and has it helped them? Are the techniques that they're showing, do they work? Are they just for a select few, or are they helping everybody? You know, if you've got to pay $3,000 to go on a weekend, or sorry, we can't help you, little red flag comes up. There's an ulterior motive there. Also, how do they respond? They have favorites. Do they like the ones that give them good feedback and ignore the people that keep on asking so-called silly questions? actually a really good teacher takes those silly questions and really see that's where we have to start. So what do they say? Bring the weakest link along so that we all have silly questions, so-called silly questions. Actually, they're not silly. Having the confidence to ask a question, it's a really big deal. So a valid refuge or a valid teacher is someone that encourages everybody, including the most disturbed, including the ones that just don't get it. So this checklist, if you go through this checklist, then you know what you're putting your refuge in, whether it's who to vote for, who to take teachings from, or how to become enlightened. You can't go wrong. It's really, really useful. So if we can do this, if we find a valid refuge, incredible benefits. The benefits of having this kind of confidence that the path that we're on and who's leading us along, we have real confidence in it that it will help and it will work. It means when we have refuge, we stop being distracted. We automatically prioritize what's important and what's not. So all that noise coming from outside, it doesn't worry us anymore. We're not distracted by the senses, by social media. We know it's important, just effortlessly. It's a result. How incredible. Our path through life becomes clear. We know where we're going, what we're doing, why we're getting up in the morning, what's it all for. We naturally become a better human being. So as we go through our life, we become a better person. We don't become old and cranky, crankier and older and crankier and older, like grumpy old men and grumpy old women. I mean, there's even movies and documentaries about this. Actually, we get more energy. We become wiser. We become nicer to be with. We become a help for others. It's a natural result of finding a refuge that's not just society and media, but a really valid refuge. And it also means we are protected from suffering. We have that umbrella. We have the mind protection so that when we are out in the world, we are the positive influence rather than coming home feeling like deluged in trouble. We ourselves are protected, and then you know, we're a better human being to help others. So that's commonly called resilience, I think. So we know we're on the right track when we stop overly concentrating on the faults of others and start looking within. So I probably put this in just for me, you know, that like all the time I'm, you know, that habit of just being critical. So instead you just do the whole U-turn and you look within your own mind first. It's a whole paradigm shift. Instead of blaming everything out there, circumstances, what's happened to us, all the change and the upheaval with COVID, and that's why I'm so upset. To see there, that's the conditions, but actually what's happening, where it's happening, is in my mind. So we start looking within. Doing that whole emotional U-turn, that's the start of something amazing. So just before I do the little summary and we finish up, what other questions, comments, anything about refuge, finding a direction in life? If it's all okay, then it's all okay. So the summary, we've looked at how there are six factors that cause our disturbing emotions to arise, how when we have all six of them together, it's a perfect storm, and it means the result is unhappiness and inner turmoil. So if we want to get rid of our unhappiness, if we want to create some peace and calm, if we want to recognize that all of that weather, that perfect storm, actually happens in the vast, clear spaciousness of the sky, we've got to start removing the weather and the pollution and everything like that. And so that's recognizing these six factors and starting to just bit by bit remove their effects on us. Any notes on comparison with others causing the inner turmoil? Yeah, so again, whether it's other circumstances or other people, others are in turmoil, but how much it affects us, that's our story, that's our business. So, you know, first steps first. The first thing is to recognize how we are being affected and just become aware of it. And part of the reflection sheets, the homework, is just this ratio to notice how much effect others have on us without being judgmental about it, but just seeing how much energy that takes to withstand. And then to recognize that, yes, they may be in turmoil, or they may be really negative, or they may be really depressed and bringing me down, but why I am brought down is my stuff. That's my business. Because actually, what we're aiming for is that when someone's really down, we can bring them up. Or when someone's really angry, instead of responding back, retaliating back like we do, someone goes, oh, blah, 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 and we go, oh, blah, 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 back, we respond with kindness and with a little pause and with some calm. It's like when all the kiddies are yelling, rah, 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 and we just yell back, rah, 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 it just gets noisier. If we actually notice before everything gets to this hysterical kind of loudness and we start being quieter, we become the influence and then everybody else starts becoming quieter. So this is that U-turn of becoming the inner being, that yes, there is the turmoil all around us, but first, our job is to look at how that affects us and deal with that. That's our umbrella protection, mind protection. So society and the media and knowing how to guard our mind from that, because we can't stop the pressures of society and we can't stop the media. The genie is out of the bottle. So what we must do is guard our mind, and then we can actually find some peace. Because we create it. We can't wait for the peace to happen to us. We do have everything that we need to create that peace within our mind. And so then to get proactive and find a valid refuge, whether it's Buddhist teachings, whether it's psychology, whether it's philosophy, to find a refuge and research it and really know this is valid and it will help me. Because it meets that checklist criteria. And then society and the media will stop being our default refuge. So there are reflection sheets that if you got the notes or the package, this one, the worksheet on society and the media. So it's just really simple questions, only one or two lines to write on. So not a huge amount. Of course, you don't have to hand them in. They're entirely private, so you can just go for it, the reflection sheets. And if you have, you know, anything to share about next week, then that would be great. In the coming week, just notice what's going on with society and media and investigate what your refuges are, what the default ones are, and then bringing one in on purpose. And next week we're going to look at seed and object. So why some things trigger us, other things don't, and what we can do about it. So let's dedicate the merits. Thank you so much, everyone, for coming and for spending the time and lending me your attention. And for putting the effort in to concentrate, for your good-heartedness. Feel really good about that, making this investment in yourself as a human being and an investment in society to make the world a better place. And let's dedicate, you know, for all of our immediate goals like that of being able to lead our life well. But let's also dedicate without limit, that everything that we've talked about, may we be able to bring all of our potential to its utmost, become liberated from problems, become fully enlightened like a Buddha, become a Buddha for the benefit of everybody.